The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 93 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sands. Welcome to episode 93. I'm so happy to have you with us, and I'm so happy to have my lovely sister Caroline Knight joining me today. Caroline, how are you?
I'm okay, lovely brother.
Excellent. You've never called me that in your entire life.
I thought so. I should say you're lovely since you said I'm lovely too.
That's good. Thanks for reciprocating. Yeah, that's my big word for the day. Yes. Very good. There's going to be lots of sibling love and rivalry today because we Lino Sobol is not with us today. He's busy with family. He's got his nephew and niece, I think. He's got a few family obligations that he's got his hands full, literally. So Lino, we salute you for being a good uncle and hope you have a great day. we'll tell him all about it tomorrow when we see him. Yeah. How have you been, Caroline?
Yeah, not too bad. I feel like I've been so busy that I can't even remember what I've been doing. So many things the last few weeks. Yes. But yes. Yeah.
It has been a busy couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. As summer is winding down and autumn is picking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just feel like the busyness is coming in.
It really does.
Yeah. But that's why this time of the year we have Labor Day. So we are actually podcasting at the very beginning of a long weekend here in Australia, which is great. Is it just in Victoria or is it all of Australia?
That's a very good question. From memory, I think they're a bit different through the states, but that's just from memory. My memory's not that good. So
at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's their bad luck. It's our Labor Day.
We've got to make the Melbourne, most of it. So yes, we have Monday off. Yes. And my children actually had yesterday off as well, so Friday as well. Mm-hmm. And my eldest son had Thursday off too because he was at camp on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
At camp, yes.
So they gave them a day off to rest on the Thursday. Oh, so he's had, he has got a very long time off school at the moment.
Yeah. That's right. He probably needs the rest.
He does.
Yeah.
They did a lot of activities, very, a lot of energy intensive activities. So, but he enjoyed it. He had a great time.
Yeah, and no one wants to say to the kids, you must come to school the day after a camp because they will be tired and cranky and it will just be a bad day for them and for the teacher.
He was definitely half asleep. Home, yeah, for sure. He was definitely half asleep on Thursday. He would not have been any good at school.
Yeah, no learning would have happened today.
No.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get this show on the road. So before we do begin, though, if you're new to listening to The Catholics of Oz, you can subscribe to the show on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and yes, I did get those the wrong way around. Tune in or your favorite podcast player. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating and some positive feedback so that we can hear from you and reach new people. And welcome if you're a new listener. We love having new people aboard. So tell us about yourself and who you are. SQPN hosts The Catholics of Oz on YouTube as well. You can subscribe there. Just look for SQPN on YouTube and hit the bell to get notifications. And of course, click the subscribe button because you can't get notifications unless you subscribe first. Caroline, I'm doing things in all kinds of orders today, but maybe we'll get the segments in the right order. Let's try that.
Let's do that.
So let's do that. Yeah. Let's start with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh?
Oh.
Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So today, I wanted to talk about something that's actually going on in the life of the church right now. And, you know, in some of my previous topics, I've talked about broad things that are going on at the top, like, you know, the synod on synodality and all the things related to that and things that Pope Francis has said. And, you know, they're all really important topics for our faith. But what about right down at the everyday, you and me, layperson level, what's going on? Well, if you are a Catholic, or even if you're not a Catholic, right now in the Catholic Church, there are people all around the world who are preparing to enter into the church and receive their sacraments of baptism, communion, and confirmation. So it's a special time of the year for those people. And they went through on the first Sunday of Lent, and usually it would be with their bishop if that's possible, or otherwise it would be a bishop's delegate. They went through what's called the rite of election. And I think this is a ritual that maybe we don't all know about unless we're becoming Catholics for the first time, in which case then you'll find out about it. But it is a beautiful ritual, and something I just wanted to say a little bit more about, and what you can do to support these people who are going to be entering the church very soon at Easter. So Caroline, the first thing I wanted to mention is that the rite of election is actually part of a journey or a pilgrimage that these soon-to-be newly minted Catholics, that's, I should say baptized, shouldn't I? They're not a coin.
Not minted. Yeah,
anyway, these newly baptized Catholics that are going to be entering the church fully soon, they've been on a journey for quite some time. And the RCIA, which is the Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults, and I'm glad I got that right because acronyms are not my friends. But this is the church's process that's been set up to support people who are in their adult life want to enter the church. So it's for anyone who, what the church defines as the age of reason, right? So this is people who are old enough to now sort of take responsibility for their faith, their faith life, and their lives in general. So anyone who's reached the age of reason and then into adulthood who wants to be part of the Catholic Church, who wants to be baptized into the church and so on, they first go through the rite of Christian initiation, which is where it's basically a period of discernment and learning. And it has four steps to it. It has the first step, which is called the period of inquiry. The second step, which is the period of catechumen. The third one, which is the period of purification and enlightenment, and the fourth step, which is the period of mystagogy and post-baptismal catechesis. So I want to talk about the rite of election, which is during that third stage. But before I do that, I just wanted to talk about these other stages as well. And something that I wanted to mention too, I remember I did a sacraments course with Father Elio Capra a few years back now. And he's really good. He's the priest who I've talked about before, who has taught me a lot about, you know, religious art. So he's, you know, very passionate about religious art and all kinds of art. But one thing that he was talking about was, because he's also an expert in the sacraments and the RCIA, he said that and I've already used the word too, so I have to catch myself out, but he said the RCIA is not a process, it's a pilgrimage. And he said, you have to remember that, because sometimes what we can do is put a fixed period on, you know, it's like start today and you'll be a Catholic by next Easter. But actually that's not entirely accurate, because if it's a period of discernment for that person, the journey should take as long as it takes. So instead of being a 1-year journey, it might be a 3 or a 5-year journey, because a person has to follow that call in their heart of Jesus to where it will take them. And they may not feel ready at the next available Easter to become fully Catholic. They might need longer. And that's what this whole RCIA journey is about. It's not about you'll do this by October, this by February, and we'll have you baptized by, you know, by Easter the year following. It's a lot more involved than that. So the first step in that process is the period of inquiry. And this one, it's also called, you know, a period of evangelization or pre-catechumenate. So evangelization is meeting God. It's hearing the word of God and responding to it. But it's a time where those who are seeking to learn about the Catholic faith and decide if it's for them, it's a chance for them to learn about it and to explore what the church believes, and also to ask questions. So this stage is a time of reflection and discovery, and there's no rush. Like I said, this is not about hurrying them towards the next Easter. It's about them taking their time to learn about the gospel, know what the gospel message is, and to enter more fully into the life of the church. And this stage, this period of inquiry, goes for as long as it needs to go. So rather than saying, hey, we're going to do a period of inquiry for 2 months, and by that point, we'll move you on to the next stage, that's kind of not the way it works. All right. So it's a period of inquiry in which the person will decide if the Catholic Church is even for them. The thing is, you don't want to force someone into the church. They have to freely assent to, they're adults now, they've reached the age of reason. They have to freely assent to this decision to become Catholic. So during this period of inquiry, they learn, they ask questions, and if they feel that that this is for them, that they want to follow Christ, have Christ in their life, be a missionary disciple for Christ, then they move on to the next step. And the next step is the period of catechumen. So they become catechumens, or they're part of the catechumenate, and it's a period of time, and this is from the RCIA booklet. It says it's a period of time during which the candidates are given a suitable pastoral formation and guidance. So this is where it's really about formation now. It's not just about asking questions, but it's about a person saying, yep, I think I want to continue with this journey. I think I will be entering the church. So I've decided I want to be Catholic, and so let's get the learning on. So they're trained in Christian life, and the dispositions manifested at their acceptance into the catechumen are brought to maturity. So this is a period of growth. So it follows that first stage, which leads to commitment. And this initial conversation, this inquiry period that they originally had, is deepened. And the person comes to know more and more and deeply love God in their own lives during this time. The faith of catechumens is deepened through their own personal prayer, reflection, and also through reading of the Word of God. Catechumens gather with the Catholic community on Sundays for the first part of Mass, but then after the homily, they're dismissed from the church and they'll go with a catechist and continue that process of reflection and application. So you can see that it's quite involved, right? So an adult catechumen, they go to Mass, but then after the homily, they're out. out you go, and it's time for a period of reflection because they haven't received their first communion yet. So they're preparing themselves for that moment, which is quite interesting. And I'm sure that this has links to sort of the ancient way the church used to do things. So that period of catechumen also lasts as long as it needs to. And it says for the unbaptized, this must be at least 12 months. So if it's a person that hasn't been baptized before, it needs to be at least 12 months. So then during that period of catechumen, we then move to the rite of election. And this is the part that I wanted to say a little bit about today. So the rite of election is a ritual in the church where the period of the catechumenate is closed. It's finished, right? Because now we're moving to where it's usually in the first Sunday of Lent, and it's leading towards that moment at the Easter Vigil where they'll be fully baptized, they'll receive their communion and receive their confirmation. And I'm sure I said that in the wrong order, because it would actually be baptism, confirmation, and then communion. That's what I should have been getting at. And I'm just not doing things in order today, Caroline, so maybe I need more coffee.
You need more days off. That's all. More public holidays.
A few more. I'd love a few more days off. That'd be great. What happens is during Lent, they're prepared to receive these sacraments on Easter Vigil night, and the catechumens celebrate this liturgical rite, the rite of election. And it's called election because the acceptance made by the church is founded on the election by God, in whose name the church acts. So I'm just reading from the RCIA booklet again. The step is called the enrollment of names because as a pledge of fidelity, the candidates inscribe their names in the book that lists who are those who have been chosen for initiation. So there is a literal book where they'll either, depends on how the rite is run in a particular place, they'll either write their names in the book as the elects, that are coming into the church, or their names will be read from the book by the bishop. So the catechumen period then, like I said, is closed, and this happens on the first Sunday of Lent. The godparents or the sponsors of the catechumens will then be asked if their catechumens, if they're the person they're sponsoring is worthy. They'll be asked, is the person worthy to be admitted to the sacraments of Christian initiation? And after they answer the affirmative, because you're not going to go to a rite of election unless the person is ready to go, right? So they're going to be like, no, actually, they're not ready. 12 more months, please. All right, it's not going to happen like that. Sorry, my mistake. So they'll affirm that. And then after answering in the affirmative, the congregation, the people who are present, are then asked if they're willing to support the catechumens in faith, prayer, and example. And this is for us, right? Because I went to a rite of election a few years ago as part of a course I did on the sacraments. I had never heard of a rite of election before in my life. I had no idea what it was. And so the first time I went, I didn't realize that just as a person who had no idea who these catechumens were, these new people, there were, you know, a couple of hundred there at the cathedral or whatever it was, I had no idea who they were, and I was asked to be an example for those people by my faith. And that's the part that I think is really important in this period of Lent for all of us. We don't know, or you may know a catechumen, you may know someone who's entering the church, or you may not. There may be someone in your parish right now, or there may be a person who you know, who you don't encounter in church, who's actually preparing to enter the Catholic Church. And this is the moment for us to commit for those people to be examples of faith, to support them in their faith journey, just by being, you know, disciples of Christ in whatever way that we can. So that responsibility every Easter is put on all of us. And so at that point, the bishop will say to the catechumens directly, your own godparents and teachers and this entire community have spoken in your favor. The church in the name of Christ accepts their judgment and calls you to the Easter sacraments. Since you have already heard the call of Christ, you must now express your response to that call clearly and in the presence of the whole church. Therefore, do you wish to enter fully into the life of the church through the sacraments of baptism, confirmation, and the Eucharist? And they respond, we do. And so this is done in front of their sponsors, and it's done in front of the people who are present, and it's done within the diocese that we're all part of. So then when they say we do, the names of the catechumens are either, like I said, called out from the book or written into the book. And the bishop then says, I now declare you to be members of the elect, to be initiated into the sacred mysteries at the next Easter Vigil. So then there's some intercessions, so, you know, prayers of intercession. And then the bishop will stretch his hands over the elect and say, Lord God, you created the human race and are the author of its renewal. Bless all your adopted children and add these chosen ones to the harvest of your new covenant. As true children of the promise, may they rejoice in the eternal life won, not by the power of nature, but through the mystery of your grace. And from there, they are on their way. They're on their way to receiving the sacraments. So they'll enter into, from that moment on, they'll use Lent to enter into what's called a period of purification. And this period of purification is using Lent to prepare for their sacraments. So during this time, during Lent, they enter into a time of prayer and reflection and fasting and sacrifice. And special prayers are even, if there are some in the parish, special prayers are offered for them as well publicly. So there are some prayers that are called the scrutinies. These prayers strengthen in grace and virtue and for the purification from all past evil, from any bonds which hinder them from experiencing the love of God. So through the period of Lent, the elect are invited to join with the whole church in a deeper practice of the works of charity and in the practice of fasting. So what do we do during Lent? Pray, fast, give, and they're invited to be part of that that journey as well. During this period, the reflection on scriptures continue, the readings of Lent, which are chosen with the themes of continuing conversion in mind. So towards the end of this period, the church continues the custom of handing over, entrusting to the elect, the creed and the Lord's Prayer, which I love. So they're actually given, you know, the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father, and the Creed. So this is for you, the faith you're about to enter into. And then following that, we have the Easter, what's it called? The Easter Vigil, which is the Saturday night Easter service. And at that point, they are then fully baptized into the church community. And there's one more step, and I'm not going to say a lot about this, but just briefly, the next step following this, because it's not the end of the journey, there's a period of what's called mystagogy and post-baptismal catechesis. So it's essentially they continue learning more about their faith. They're given a title. They're called neophytes, okay, which is from the Greek word meaning new plant, because the faith has been planted in them. This is the period in which the community is called to accompany new Catholics as they discover what it means to fully participate in the sacramental mysteries of the church. So although their catechetical preparation is completed, they still have to learn more about their faith. And this is the key thing. They're supported by their godparents. They're supported by their people in their church community, because the whole point of the journey, it's almost a process, right? The journey, the pilgrimage of this catechumenate is not just to become Catholics. It's to become missionary disciples, which is all of us already, right? It's to be missionary disciples. So it's not about you've done the baptism, you've done the confirmation, you've done the communion. Oh, thank God, now it's all over. We can stop. No, it's about the seed of faith has been planted in your heart. You are a new plant, and we nourish that plant, you know, over time, so that they can be missionary disciples in the church alongside us as well. So it's a beautiful journey. I actually like the RCI a lot, and I think it's a very fulfilling one. And I love seeing every year on my Facebook, I follow a few different dioceses and archdioceses, and you know, they'll all have photos of the catechumenates as I scroll through and see what the so it's quite nice. And there's quite a few people. I'm amazed. It's like, wow, these people are joining the church. I wonder how that happened. It's so
wonderful.
They've obviously bumped into people who are missionary disciples. So it's quite wonderful. Amazing.
Great news. Yeah.
So I just wanted to finish very quickly, because the good old Archdiocese of Melbourne did this, all right? They had they welcomed the catechumens and candidates as well. And they actually interviewed a few who shared their stories about why they're entering the church at this time. So if I can just share three very, very quick examples about people who are entering the church. And if any of you are a catechumen, or if you know any, tell us about it. We would love to know. So the first one, I'll just get my notes organized, is Rory. And Rory is 22 years old and is entering the church. He's from St. James the Apostle at Hopper's Crossing. And I've lost my spot. And he describes his upbringing as one that was very contemptuous of Christianity. So he wasn't a fan of Christianity growing up. He said, "When I was younger, throughout high school and university, I was very hostile to religion," he says. "I despised religion and felt that religion and faith were responsible for a lot of the world's problems and suffering, especially Catholicism. I got to the point where I would look at people who are religious with disdain. So what changed? As I got older, around 20, I often felt that I was missing something and started to slowly change my mind on there being a God. I became agnostic. It was around 21, I realized that what I was missing was God and his love for my life, and that my hate towards religion, particularly Catholicism, was misguided, that God's love was eternal. From there, in 2022, I began researching and discovering that faith was right for me and the right path to follow. I firmly believe that the Catholic faith is that one." So that's one, right? You know, then we have Joanna, who's 36 years old. She said, "When I was growing up, I wanted to have answers to the bigger questions in life. Why are we here in this world? What is our purpose? As I grew older and started working, this question diminished. I was earning a fairly comfortable income, but I felt spiritually empty," she explains. "I did not understand why, and I was constantly trying to fill that emptiness through the earthly comforts. It was only when I started going to Mass through a difficult time in life that I decided to ask a few friends about their Christian faith, tried attending Mass, and started seeking my own journey." So the RCI process was one she describes as being deeply transformative. "With every passing week, I felt more attracted to knowing more about God. And before I knew it, I was spiritually transformed. The emptiness I felt was filled." And so we can see the operation of grace right here in the lives of these people who have decided to join the church. Last one, let's pick one more. I'm just going to pick a random one. Kim, 43 years old, is a catechumen from Hampton Park, so down the road from us, yeah. Caroline. Although her mother was Catholic, her father was not. Her mother didn't have his support to baptize any of the children. Their baptism was always a missing link in their faith. Kim describes her conversion as becoming part of a beautiful family now and safe home. "I feel that this journey is where we needed to be," she says. So, and then there's, you know, Vanessa, who's 50, and a few other people, all right? So this beautiful list of, it says at the bottom here, "Please keep Rory, Joanna, Jillian, Rob, Roger, Kim, and Vanessa." These are the people in the article, which I'll share, "in your prayers, along with all those preparing to enter the church as they continue their journey towards the Easter Vigil." And I think that's the message for all of us. Let's pray for the catechumens, those who are entering the church. They've been on this beautiful pilgrimage. They've encountered God like we all did at some point in our lives. And let's pray for them, either that we can be there for them where we need to be, or that the grace of God will grow in their lives as they continue to find more answers in their journey. there you go. What do you think, Caroline?
I love it. I love that people are finding the faith, you know, when they're older, all sorts of different ages. You know, I think we take it for granted when we're a Catholic, like we're baptized when we're babies, and we just take it for granted that this is our Catholic faith, and we're Catholic, and we just, you know, go about our Catholic life, and we do our sacraments slowly. You know, we take our time as we grow up, we get older, and at a certain age, we make communion, confirmation, you know, reconciliation. Mm-hmm. But these people have come to the realization as adult, and you know, they, I guess, in a way, they are able to discern with adult eyes, you know, whether they want to become a Catholic. And I think it's a really huge step to become a Catholic as an adult, because
absolutely,
you know, before you were not of the faith, you didn't believe in God, a lot of these people, or they may have been from another denomination, and they've decided that I'm going to take the plunge and I'm going to become a Catholic. And I mean, can you imagine backlash they may get from friends, family, you know, colleagues.
Are you serious?
Yeah, like, you're going to become a Catholic, really? Like, are you one of those, you know? And, you know, so it's so refreshing and lovely to hear the stories of these people coming into the church, and they've found something so valuable to them spiritually, and it's fulfilling their lives. And I just love hearing these stories. Yeah. So it's really great that you highlighted it, Lindsay. Yeah.
Yeah, I was happy to, because I think it's such a beautiful and maybe sometimes not fully realized. Mm. Sometimes we only realize when there's a person wearing all whites at Easter vigils. Oh, that person is in the church tonight. That's great.
Yeah.
But there's also that whole journey that they've been on to prepare for that as well. How on earth are these people coming into the church when, you know, what happened? What made them decide to do it, right? That this... and all I can say is it's the grace of God, isn't it?
Really,
they've encountered God in some kind of way, and they've said, all right, this is for me. This is the answer to that question I've been asking for so long.
And really,
and the ages 22, 43, 50 in between.
And society is really geared against people becoming a Catholic. If you look at it, like the media, social norms, all of that, you've got to fight against all of this to really. You know, you've got to really have the conviction inside you and the grace of God to just say, you know, despite all this, I'm going to become a Catholic. And it's such a gift, such a gift.
Yeah. And if you peer through, like if you can just, you know, tear the veil of all the, what's it called? The, the scandals, you know, the people in the church who have done the wrong thing, who is not everyone.
No, it's a minority.
You know,
the
fights that go on inside the church, these pointless fights that people have about, you know, things that are going on in the church and whatever else. There's Christ, and there's the pure love of Christ. And this is what people have managed to find, which I think is amazing. A previous principal at the school I worked at, he talked about... a family. This was at the height of the Royal Commission, right? Or like around the Royal Commission time or the Victorian Commission, whichever one it was, right? Which uncovered some really nasty stuff that the Australian church had done. We'll be honest, right? Let's not pretend that there weren't cover-ups and things. There absolutely were. And this was at the very start of the year, this principal who I used to work for was addressing us all, and he was talking about a family, so, you know, a couple and who had a few kids, and all of them were entering into the church that Easter. So he was telling us this in January. He said, and this Easter, they're coming in. And he said, he challenged him. He said, have you seen what's going on in the news? You know, how can you still be considering entering the church? He wasn't discouraging them, but he was really curious. And the parents said to him, the beliefs. You know, it's the beliefs. We found Christ. You know, they understood that there were some terrible things that people have done in Jesus' name, but Jesus is Jesus, and whatever people do in his name that's not good, it's we can tell when it's not him, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because our God is a God of love, and when someone in our church does something that does not represent that love and is quite the opposite, for me, I think it highlights the importance of that love. Like how important that love is, and here's what the opposite of it looks like. You know, here's what the that failing of that love looks like, and reminds us how much we really need it. And I wonder, you know, if these catechumens have discovered the same thing. You know, this is because a lot of them have talked about this is the search to what I was looking for. They haven't found, it's not so much they found answers, it's they've encountered the love of God in some kind of way. And that love has become the grace which has drawn them even closer and closer to the heart of Christ, which I think is quite beautiful. Yeah. So good on them. So welcome. When that all happens, all the catechumens all around the world, welcome. And if you know a catechumen, anyone's listening, give a big hug and say,
and a present.
Can't wait for you to complete. And a present. Yeah. Yeah. It's all about, the sacrament's all about the party afterwards, right? Is that? Yeah. Well, you get a big party, you get the resurrection.
That's right.
So it's which is pretty awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on from there, Caroline, because I'm going to hand it over to you, because you're going to tell us all about science this week.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
I wanted to talk about women in science this week because it was International Women's Day on March the 8th. And taking from the website, International Women's Day is a global day celebrating the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. This day also marks a call to action for accelerating women's equality. And you know, I think when we think about science, most of us think about what contributions men made. I mean, there are many famous men who made major discoveries, amazing discoveries, but there also have been women. And, you know, in Australia, women only make up 36% of enrolments in university STEM courses. And I think that, you know, it is increasing, but we I think there needs to be a bit more of you know, encouragement for women, because women are intelligent just as men are, and are also able to make contributions to science. I mean, we all have heard of Marie Curie, for example, who you know, she just, you know, was doing radio studies in radioactivity. But, you know, I wanted to this time highlight women in science in Australia, because obviously we're an Australian podcast, and I don't know if many people know a lot about women in science in Australia. Despite not many women going into science, we have made some major discoveries and major contributions to the science world and to technology and to medicine and to all sorts of fields. So I thought I would just pick a few women who've made some really good contributions and just briefly talk about what they've done for science in Australia. So,
excellent. Yeah.
So let's go. So let's start off with Professor Susan Corey. She is a molecular biologist. Her most significant contribution to science was her co-discovery of the apoptosis gene, which she made in the early 1980s. Her discoveries in the 1980s and 90s occurred while she was a researcher at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute of Medical Research in Melbourne, Australia. Now, apoptosis is a normal process that occurs in healthy cells to remove damaged or abnormal cells from the body. In cancer cells, however, the process of apoptosis is often disrupted, leading to uncontrolled cell growth and the formation of tumors. By identifying and characterizing the apoptosis genes, Corey's research has helped shed light on how cancer cells avoid apoptosis and has provided new targets for cancer therapy. In 1986, she and her colleagues had identified the first apoptosis gene, which they named BCL2. And then over the next year, the few years after that, they went on to discover more genes to do with apoptosis, including the BAX, the BAD, the BCLX genes. And now they're known to play critical roles in the regulation of apoptosis and are now targets for the development of new cancer therapies. Her research has also led to a greater understanding of how genes are regulated and expressed, especially in the immune system, as well as learning about signaling pathways and genetic interactions involved in the immune response. So that's quite a major discovery. Really good work. you know, leading to cancer therapy and learning more about cancer, which was a bit of an unknown before. Yeah. So it's really great that she managed to undertake that research and come up with that. Next is Dr. Kathy Foley. She's an Australian physicist who's made a significant contribution to the field of superconductivity. She made her discoveries in the late 1980s and 90s while she was a researcher at the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, CSIRO. While working at CSIRO, she made significant contributions to the understanding of nitride semiconductors and superconducting electronics. In the 1990s, she led a team of researchers that discovered a new class of high-temperature superconducting materials. These had the potential to revolutionize a wide range of technologies, from electrical power transmission to MRI. And her work on superconductivity has also led to new insights into the fundamental properties of matter and the behavior of electrons in solids. And her research has helped to develop new theories and models of superconductivity. Dr. Foley and her team went on to develop the LandTEM sensor system used to locate deposits of minerals deep underground, such as nickel, sulfide, silver, and gold. And she's currently Australia's chief scientist at the moment.
That
role is, basically they provide authoritative and independent science advice to the government about science and technology priorities. So, wow, just from going to working in the CSIRO to now becoming Chief Scientist of Australia.
Chief Scientist.
Amazing work.
Amazing.
Yes, go women. Next, I'd like to talk about Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn. She is a molecular biologist who is best known for her co-discovery of telomerase, which is an enzyme that plays a role in the aging process and the development of cancer. She made her discovery in the mid-1980s while she was a researcher at the University of California in Berkeley. In 1984, Blackburn and her colleague Jack Szostak discovered telomeres, which I learned about at university, which is awesome that she's the one that discovered, the protective caps at the end of chromosomes. And these were composed of repeating DNA sequences. They found that telomeres shortened during cell division. So every time a cell divided, these telomeres would shorten. And this led to cellular aging and eventually cell death. This discovery was groundbreaking because it helped to discover the mechanism of cellular aging. In 1985, she and her colleagues discovered an enzyme they named telomerase that could replenish the telomeres and prevent them from shortening. This discovery was significant because it provided a potential target for new anti-aging and cancer therapies, which is really cool. I mean, what a thing to discover.
Yeah, I feel like I remember hearing about this story because the big buzz thing, you know, in the mainstream channels was we've uncovered the secret of aging, how people are getting older and can we now reverse it? Yeah, that was the, it had to do with their telomeres and the lengths. That's right. I remember hearing about this. That was a very cool story.
That is very cool. Yeah. Very cool. We've got some
more. That's all I understand about it, what I just said.
It's a major discovery. I mean, these are all things that we didn't know before, you know, and it's great that women had a role in, you know, discovering them as well. So next, I'd like to talk about Professor Michelle Simmons, who's an Australian physicist. This one's amazing. She's well known for the development of the field of atomic electronics. She and her team at the University of New South Wales were able to develop the technique for building electronic devices at the atomic scale, which is known as atomic precision lithography. In 2017, Professor Simmons and her team were able to create a tiny transistor that consisted of just a few atoms and also read of just one atom. This paved the way for the development of new quantum computing technologies, which rely on the properties of individual atoms to perform calculations. She and her team went to develop a range of other quantum computing technologies, including a new type of qubit, which is a quantum bit, that is more stable and reliable mm-hmm. than previous designs. So these discoveries in nanotechnology have made it possible for the development of faster and more powerful computers in the future. So I thought that was pretty amazing. Atomic electronics. Wow.
Mind-blowing.
It really is.
Yeah. It's incredible because we don't necessarily hear about these people, no. but what they do that has enhanced our daily living, you know, yes. supported our daily living is, we take for granted sometimes
that's
as well.
That's it. Exactly. There's so much going on that we don't know about, and that's, you know, and you know, some women scientists that we definitely don't know about.
don't know about at all.
That's yep. it. Dr. Fiona Wood, you may have heard of her. She's been in the media before. Dr. Fiona Wood is an Australian plastic surgeon and a researcher who's made significant contributions to the development of new treatments for burns and other skin surgeries. She performed her research in the 1990s and early 2000s while at the Royal Perth Hospital Burns Unit and the University of Western Australia. In the late 1990s, she and her team developed a revolutionary new treatment for burns called spray-on skin. This treatment involved taking a small sample of healthy skin from a patient, isolating the cells that produce a new skin, and then growing these cells in the lab. And these cells are already compatible with the burn's victim. So, there's, you know, when they put it on, it doesn't get rejected or anything like that. The resulting skin cells were then sprayed onto the patient's burn wound where they grew and regenerated new skin. Before that, skin grafting techniques were used, which involved taking large sections of skin from other parts of the body and grafting them onto the burn wound, which is quite, if you've seen that before, it seems really painful and really hard to deal with.
Yes.
Wood's work on spray-on skin was first used on the survivors of the Bali bombings. And
there's
a lot of victims from that, unfortunately. And since has led to improvements generally in the treatment of burns and other skin injuries, and has been used to treat patients all around the world, which is so wonderful.
That is amazing.
It is.
Yep.
It is.
Yep.
And lastly, I mean, there are so many women, but I just picked a few. Lastly, I have Professor Anne Kelso, who's an Australian immunologist, who has made a significant contribution to the field of medical research. She is well known for her work in understanding the immune response to the influenza virus and her contributions to the development of vaccines against influenza viruses. One of her key contributions was the discovery of the role of T cells in the immune response to influenza. In the late 80s and 90s, Kelso and her colleagues were able to show that T cells played a critical role in the immune response to influenza, particularly in controlling the spread of the virus from the respiratory tract to other parts of the body. This discovery challenged the prevailing view that immune response to influenza was primarily mediated by antibodies. She was also involved in the development of new vaccine strategies against influenza. In early 2000s, Kelso and her team developed a new vaccine strategy that combined live attenuated virus, so virus that is alive but can't infect you, with a synthetic molecule called a toll-like receptor agonist, which is a TLR agonist. This vaccine was found to be highly effective in inducing both T cell and antibody responses against influenza, and has since been used in clinical trials. So that's quite a major discovery as well.
She has my deepest thanks because I hate the flu, and any flu shot that will help me not get it.
Yes, 100%.
Is a winner in my books.
100%. So, yeah. I mean, this is really interesting stuff as well, you know. It's pretty cool.
Yes, yeah.
So, these are just a handful, honestly. If you go looking in on the Googles for women, Australian women in science, there's actually heaps and heaps. There's been many, many contributions and discoveries made by women. And, I just think that this is, you know, International Women's Day is a special day to kind of highlight this because women, I think equality for women is still something to be worked towards because, you know, in science, in all fields, politics, that's a big one, you know, everywhere pretty much. So we love our men. Don't worry. I'm not having a go at men. I'm just saying that.
No, of course not. And that's not what this day is about. Of course, we know that. We're, you know, yeah.
It's just about highlighting women.
I'm going to say there are still some places in the world.
Yes.
And places in the Western world where.
Yeah.
We haven't quite met this idea of equality. And what we mean by equality in this sense is that, you know, the opportunity should be there for anyone.
That's right.
And we only have to look at, for example, you just cited at the beginning of this segment that, what was it, the STEM fields, 30%.
Yeah, 36% are women.
So there's an imbalance, 36%.
There is an imbalance.
And so there's opportunity for, you know, for more. And one thing I think is important is to highlight, you know, figures, women who have, you know, who have achieved in these areas so that other young women can say, yes, I can do this too.
Exactly.
Because sometimes maybe people might say, this is a field that's mostly for men. This is a field that's mostly for women. And that's maybe not necessarily always true, not necessarily always helpful to think, because maybe if we say that, we're also saying, not welcome. You're not welcome in this field, you know, like giving that perception, you know, and I'm not a raging feminist, anyone who's listening, right? But, you know, but the important thing is, again, if we want to put a Catholic link into this, the dignity of the human person, we're all made in God's image and we can't take away opportunities for people to thrive, you know, the gifts of this earth, including, you know, the gifts of science and so on. In this particular instance, it's for all of us to access.
That's
so when I say all of us, I mean men and women.
That's right.
Yeah.
And often...
Where's my Nobel Prize? No, sorry, go on.
Very good, very good.
Yeah.
And it's true. I know going through high school, like you'd find girls weren't going into the sciences and I might have been like one of a few who'd be doing chemistry and like biology was okay, but like that kind of thing. And I did have a teacher's kind of like, maybe shouldn't be doing science. Like, but I did science despite myself. It's not because I was highly intelligent. It's more that I was really interested in it and something I wanted to work towards. And that's the field I wanted to work in because I just enjoyed it so much. And, and I feel like there's kind of, personally, I feel like if you're going to do science as a woman and you want to have a family, that's a whole new complication because there is still that... There is still that thing in society where women tend to be doing the childminding. If you want to have a family, it kind of falls on you, while the man has the more of a freedom to have his career and do his career. Now, it may not be the same in all families, but I feel like that still is how it happens in society. So women sometimes have more of a struggle and more of a fight to really have a career that they want to have, you know, because then they have to consider everything else as well. Do you want a career or do you want a family? It kind of comes to that. Well, can you have both and how do you have both, you know? So it kind of brings up this other thing as well. And I guess that's kind of something I wanted to mention as well. But, you know, there are a lot of lovely men who support their women as well, like
of course,
in marriages. And there are a lot of supportive men in science who do really encourage women. You see, there are heaps of women who have made breakthroughs with there have been women being highlighted in NASA as well, saying, you know, bringing out the contributions that they've made. And that's been really inspiring to me to see that as well. Yep. And the
Artemis 3 mission will see the first woman on the moon.
That's
going to be amazing.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were making me think of, because so at my school on International Women's Day, so we recently changed our house name. So after, and it was a long process, right? But we changed our house names and through the, through dialogue with students, we ended up with four women and four men, Catholics, either saints or on their way to being saints, who we thought were amazing role models and examples for all of our kids. One of the women was chosen was Mary Glowry, who is blessed. Mm-hmm. So on her way, hopefully, to being Australia's second saint.
Wonderful.
Our first one being Mary MacKillop, who's also wonderful. Now she was she became a doctor, but at a time when women weren't necessarily becoming doctors, And if she'd listened to and followed the example of the time and didn't pursue this becoming a doctor, she wouldn't have set up the Catholic health system in India that has helped so many, and she's revered by many Indians for the work that she's done. Mm. But if she had, if she hadn't gone with that and just been told, you can't enter into this field because you're a woman, all those millions of people who have benefited since the time this system has been set up would not, they wouldn't be benefiting from it. So, and again, like I said, this isn't about raging feminists, hate men. This is just, like I said, this is about the dignity of the human person. Right. And no one should be told you can't do this because of your gender.
Exactly.
I know there are some specific circumstances. Mm. All right, let's put that little caveat there, if that's fine. But when choosing a career, that the imbalance needs to be acknowledged, and if this is a field that's accessible to women, the door shouldn't be closed or held so that they can't enter. Exactly. If that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. If a woman is capable, then she's capable, and that's it. Like, there's
absolutely
no other. There shouldn't be anything holding her back from achieving what she wants to.
Well, we've gone through a lot of appreciation today of kind of humans, women, everyone, the whole lot. Yeah. All right. Shall we just move on now and finish up? Thank you. I should say thank you. That was a beautiful segment, by the way. Like I said, knowing that there are all of these women who are in these positions in Australia who have contributed in different ways to the life that we have now. They've made our lives better because of their work in the sciences.
And I enjoyed learning about these women myself because I didn't know about all of them. So it was really good. Good exercise to
and
do.
Like you said, there are so many more. I mean, I know that people who listen in the United States will be shouting out all these names that would know. Who was the one that pops out was Google, very quickly, Sister Mary Kenneth Keller. Mm-hmm. All right, she was a nun who was born in Ohio in 1914 and became a professor, I think, of computer programming. Wow. And so she had a PhD in computer science. Where is it? Her PhD was titled Inductive Inference on Computer Generated Patterns. She contributed to computer languages that we have today. And I think she contributed to what we now have, which is BASIC, which is the computer language.
Mm, excellent.
And there's so many more. Wow. You know what I mean? People could scream out all these examples. Wonderful.
Yeah. Excellent.
When I think about women in science, she's the first one that pops into mind. She was a Catholic nun who had a PhD in computer science and all these amazing things.
Love it.
Anyway, with that in mind, let's move on now and let's talk about entertainment.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
It's not what we came here to do.
No. It's what I'm going to do.
I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
All right, Caroline, I think we have some that cross over, but I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Caroline, what's been entertaining you recently?
Okay, so I've got, I'm always on the many ends of the spectrum with my entertainment. I don't have just one kind of thing.
You really are. You're the one who contributed Conk on Earth. I just want to point that out. Yeah.
Yes. That was my best contribution ever.
It wasn't your mate Paul, it was you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Or my ex Sean. But anyway. Inside joke, watch Conk on Earth. Anyway. I guess the thing that really excited me was the latest season of The Mandalorian, which I've only watched the first episode of, but I'm really hanging out to watch more. I don't know how much to say about it because I don't know if everyone's watched it yet, but safe to say it was a mind-blowing episode. It kept you on the edge of your seat the whole time. I feel like there was a little reference to a baptism, which is all I'm going to say.
Baptism. I was wondering, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. There was, all right.
We know, like Catholics, perhaps, right?
Straight away, as soon as we're like, water's getting poured, we're like, wait a minute. You got that from baptism, didn't you? We know what you're doing. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yes. We know where you got that from, which is really cool. Mm. I don't know what more to tell you, except it was really action-packed and I loved it.
The symbolism of water, though, because he has to go. So in the first episode, we can
and
say
then
this
there's
at least
another, another one of like cleansing him from his sins.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Because we know, because this was actually in Boba Fett season one, right?
We
have the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And he's told the only way to redeem himself is to go and bathe in the living waters of Mandalore, under the caves of Mandalore. Yeah. Again, you know, and you know what? This is interesting, right? Because ancient baptisms, so in the early church, they were resurrection-like experiences. Mm-hmm. So if you think of this, right, Christ went into the tomb, right, into death, into the darkness of death, and then burst forth, you know, in the resurrection, right? So conquered death. So went from death to new life in the resurrection. And in ancient baptisms, what they would do is they would have these, sorry to get a bit sidetracked, but this is the Mandalorians, right? They would have churches where you would, that would have giant, you know, baptismal pools in them or fonts, right? And you would enter from one side at a particular time of the day when the sun was rising, right? So when you entered one side of the church, it was dark. And they'd, you know, take all their clothes off, okay? And, you know, like clearly this was done sensitively, right? They'd take all their clothes off. They would walk into the water and immerse themselves into the depths of, you know, death and darkness. And when they'd walk out, there's a second door where the light from the day is entering.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd walk into the light. So baptism was a huge thing, right? Yeah. So now we've got the Mandalorian whose mission is to go into the depths of his planet and find the living waters and, you know, essentially baptize himself, whatever you want to call it, and then emerge into the light, which I think, I don't know, did someone read about Christian baptism and think, I like that idea, let's incorporate that.
But
and if not, we'll baptize the Mandalorian this series and we'll just make it Catholic anyway.
Catholic
why not?
Mandalorian, I like that.
But Catholic Mandalorian, yeah,
definitely
totally.
Great episode number one. Can't wait to see the second one.
I have seen the second one. I won't spoil it, but I'm enjoying. Yeah. And they're not big, spectacular episodes right now, right?
I thought it was pretty good.
Pretty much. Yeah. No, but what I mean is like, you know, think about how the second season ended, right? Yeah. You know, like that big, you know, like, you know, remember I was texting you like, stop what you're doing. You have to watch this episode right now. Like kick Meryl out of your house. And Meryl sent me that photo of her going, what are you doing? Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's like, watch it now.
Yeah,
watch
I remember
it now.
You doing that.
It's, yeah, but I love the storytelling. I love the build up that we're getting so far. It's been really good. So I can't wait to see when you watch episode two.
Yes.
But the Mandalorian has not let us down.
No, by far
at all. Not at all.
Great.
Yeah.
Really good.
Really good storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else are you watching, Carol?
So this week I also watch I really like fashion shows, okay? I just like seeing what people come up with. So it's this is Next in Fashion Season 2 from Netflix, on Netflix, a Netflix-produced program. And it stars Tan France as one of the judges. He was in Season 1 as well. He's a fashion designer.
Sure.
Yes. And
of course he is.
I don't know if you've people who've watched Queer Eye, you know, but he's one of the five. Is it five of them? Yeah, guys. Anyway, so he's a fashion designer and he's a judge. And then they've got Gigi Hadid, who's a model and also a daughter of one of the housewives of, I can't remember which one now, Beverly Hills or, no, not Beverly Hills.
I have no idea who these people are, but all right.
Yeah, it might
have
been.
I'll take your word for
anyway,
it.
Anyway, so look, this is how trashy I can get sometimes with my TV watching. Sometimes you just need something that's just like McDonald's to watch.
Food.
Yeah,
bit
exactly.
Of junk food. Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
and
McDonald's.
And after a
McDonald's
hard day,
TV.
You just need something to just not think about. Anyway, going back to the actual show, it's quite interesting because they get a group of designers, they'll set them a challenge every week and they have to come up with an outfit that suits a theme that they've set for them, and they only have, say, like a day to come up. I mean, you really have to be talented and very good at sewing to be able to make a whole intricate outfit that is your personality and do it in like 8 hours, and then you have a fashion show the next day where you have to dress your model, get them ready, and they go down the runway. But I just love the creativity.
Oh, wow, no
pressure. No, I love the creativity. Yeah. I mean, I slant to the artistic myself as well. So I really enjoy the artistic side of this, and it's also just a fun show to watch. I mean, I like contestant shows, like, you know, there's baking shows, there's whatever shows, but this one's particularly fun. Yeah, is it cake? That's a good one.
What's the Lego one? What was the Lego one called? Lego Masters.
Lego Masters, which they're going to have a new one of that.
To make
Actually, Lego Masters Grandmasters is coming on soon, which is past winners.
Yeah.
So that's one to watch. Okay. That one's going to be a good one.
Interesting.
So, you know, I recommend it's great fun to watch, something easy to watch and something fun to watch.
Look, one thing I'll acknowledge, I'm not a massive fan of, you know, reality TV. I can't really, it's just too much junk food for me, right? It's a bit of an overdose. But the one thing I'll acknowledge, though, is I do like seeing human creativity on display.
Yes.
I do
seeing,
you know, these creatives, these people who can make something pretty amazing. Like they you know, like seeing how their mind works to go, this is what I've been told the brief is, and now I'm, you know, I'm going to invent something that's never been invented before. Which I think is pretty interesting. The rest of it, the drama, I'm just like, whatever. Okay,
yeah,
just
I
show
mean,
me the product.
It's true. But they do actually grow during the season as well, because they, you know, they may have come in with a certain mindset, this is how I do things, but then they're challenged, and then they have to grow and change and adapt, and by the end they also all say, I didn't know I could do that, you know, I've grown and I'm able to do things that I couldn't do before, which is awesome. So yeah, it's really good to see that as well.
Yeah, look, I will admit that I did watch the six episodes, I think it was six episodes of Is It Cake? Because
Is It Cake
mainly
was
because
fun.
My kids liked seeing the, they liked guessing if that thing was a cake, and they liked seeing the different cakes that people
How
made.
Fun
so,
was that
all
one?
Right, so we did watch that.
Yes.
Yeah. The host was, his jokes were not very funny.
No.
However, the rest of it was okay. Yeah.
No, it was fun. Like putting a knife into an object to see if it was cake.
If it's cake. Yeah, that's right. Because see how realistic they make it. Yeah.
Yep. Amazing.
It was fascinating.
Anyway, hand it to you now,
so
Lindsay.
So my one is the last one. Yeah. Now, I have actually been talking about this one, but I have to bring it back up again. Yeah. Last night, I just watched the fourth episode of Star Trek Picard. And oh my goodness, it was easily the best episode of the season. It was the best episode of the entire series. And it's probably one of the best episodes of Trek that I've seen. I'm ranking it right up there with one of the best episodes of Trek I've ever seen. It was, it's not the best episode, but it was
big
so
statement.
Thoughtfully told. It is a big statement.
Yeah.
I just love that there is a bit more depth and layer to the writing of this season as opposed to some of the previous ones where it's like, we need to get from A to B to C to D, you know? This one, it's there are, you know, the flashbacks, they've been incorporating some flashbacks since the beginning of each episode, but the flashback for this episode actually has links, the way they do it, the way they link it to the events of the episode are really good. I really liked it. And there's, you know, while they're in peril, there's this sort of family drama going on, and they build up this tension between characters that we know and love, and they resolve it so well. And what's great is the characters that we know from the Next Generation, they're not just being themselves the way that we know them. They're actually growing through this. Yeah, we see them experience personal growth. And that's amongst the action that's happening and the mystery and the suspense and everything else. For me, this was like an episode, a good old Next Generation episode where the ship is in peril and they need some kind of way to get their way out of it. And everyone's got to work together. And yeah, it's really nice. And there's just some great callbacks to previous episodes. Although there's a callback to season one, which was interesting, a very brief one, but you know, which, you know, considering that season itself, but there's also callbacks to without giving any spoilers to where these characters were positioned on the bridge in the original, in the Next Generation. Yeah. So really nicely done. I'm really enjoying
Sounds
it.
Good.
And the new characters like Captain Shaw, who's this new character who everyone says is right, but we hate because of the way he treats everyone, is a good character. He's a lot of fun.
Sure.
So
okay, you convinced me. I might have to put it on my list.
Yeah. And for anyone who's thinking, do I need, yeah, because you said this before, Caroline, do I need to watch season one and two? The good news is you actually
That's great news, because I started watching Picard in the beginning and I couldn't finish it. I'm sorry.
Look, I liked season one. Season two was probably the weakest. It started out really well. The first few episodes were really good. And then it just hit this like slump, and then it had a really quick resolution because they needed to finish it. That's what it looked like to me. It was really rushed. So it wasn't so great. And I wonder if COVID lockdowns and things affected the production at all, if that was the reason.
Right.
Yeah. But season three is it's like season eight of The Next Generation, I reckon. And I'm loving it so much.
Awesome.
Yeah. So well done. Put the guy who's writing it in charge of Star Trek. Get rid of the other guy and put this guy in charge. He clearly understands it. Yeah, forever. That's it. Yeah. And when he dies, put his brain in a jar like Futurama and just get him to keep writing.
I'm sure a woman scientist will come up with the ability to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Get a woman scientist onto this to save Star Trek. All right. You'll affect so many lives all around the world.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up there then. First of all, before we go, we would love to thank you all for joining us for episode 93 of The Catholics of Oz. And before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Catholics of Oz. And today we would love to thank Robert A., James B., G. Andrew... Oh, James B. G., sorry, Andrew D., Sabrina W., and John B. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of the great shows at StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we'd like to know your thoughts about topics that we've discussed today. You can send us feedback by visiting sqpn.com/oz, where you can also find our show notes and links from today's episode. And while you're at the SQPN website, don't forget to sign up to the Insiders Club newsletter to get updates about all your favorite shows, including this one, sqpn.com/about/newsletter. And you can also find our show at SQPN's Facebook page and the other socials. So facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, on Twitter at SQPN, on Instagram, StarQuest Media. I'm trying to remember all of these. And don't forget, we have our own Facebook page, Catholics of facebook.com/Catholics of Oz, spelt OZ at the end there. And don't forget also that SQPN has a Discord channel, which includes channels for the Catholics of Oz and Let's Science, which is also a show that we produce through this show. So you can join us for discussions. And what's great is there are discussions, I like the Let's Science, how people contribute. There are people who know far more about science than I do.
We have very, and very intelligent listeners. We do.
We do. And they're a lot of fun. And there's a topic that we want to discuss soon that someone posted about, generating electricity from the air.
Yes.
So I'm hoping we can bring that one up because that's a really fascinating one.
Totally.
And someone's already got onto it and shared it. So which is really, oh no, I think I shared it actually because.
You shared it to me.
Someone shared something and I shared it.
I watched it on the news and then you shared it to me. Yeah. So it's a big topic right now, which is really interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's on the Discord. So go have a look and we'll say something about it in the near future. Yep. Otherwise, if you'd like to get in touch by good old email, catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for being on episode 93 with me.
Thank you. As always, it's been fun. Yeah. Wouldn't have missed it.
And we're looking forward to next episode because if all goes well, we'll be discussing the next Patrick oration. So look forward to that. But otherwise... Yeah, thank you for joining us. I'm Lindsay Sants, and thank you for being with us for episode 93 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, Raising the Bets. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS, bets.